This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. In any economic crisis, including the COVID-19 pandemic, the most vulnerable are the poor and self-employed. Today, we discuss the effectiveness of measures to help them. So joining me are Noor Hisham Hussain, the Chief Strategy Officer at EPF, and Ahmad Yazid Othman, the CEO of MTEM, or Majlis Tindakan Ekonomi Melayu, an umbrella organisation that represents close to 50 NGOs that champion the Malay agenda. Thank you and welcome, gentlemen. Unemployment spiked in March. Hisham, could you give us a sense of how bad the numbers might be from the amount of contributions that have been collected for April?
April actually wasn't too bad. Our view of employment is concerned, it still looks relatively okay. Obviously, the numbers are rising in terms of people who are unemployed. The thing is, from EPF's perspective, we don't have full visibility of the labour market. We have roughly about 7.3 million active members. This is as of last year. The number of people actually in the labor force in Malaysia is over 15.3 million. So we only cover maybe about half. Even though it'll give you a flavor of the situation, it doesn't give you the full, impact of what COVID is actually doing to the economy.
It's interesting that you say in April does not look too bad. And why do you think that's the case?
I think because the first part of the MCO, people still had, businesses especially, they still had some cash to buffer. But the longer it goes on, obviously, the less, I think, robust businesses are probably going to fail, especially SMEs. So the employment impact is going to get, it's basically going to be a non-linear impact. I mean, the further we go along, the worse it gets.
Yazid, you work with about close to 50 NGOs. What are you hearing from the ground?
It's actually a lot worse than what we think, because the informal sector, the freelancers, the penjajas and the daily wage earners are basically hugely affected because they can't move. The MCO basically stifled their right to actually go out and earn a living. So that basically stopped their income. So I think why we have not seen the worst yet is because to a certain extent, the government's prihatin sort of like ease that idea that they can still survive the moratorium. And a few of these cash transfers actually does help. But as you can see, now we're hearing a lot of news that not many people are getting it. This one. Number two is we're also noticing that some people are claiming that they deserve the cash transfer under the BPN, but they're not getting it too. So people are starting to feel the pain. Feedback from the penjaja is like they basically got nothing because they've been trying to get for the Prihatin PKS, but they don't seem to qualify because of the lack of documents and etc. And the government's decision to provide 3,000 grant is actually much welcome, but the application only started in May. So we're looking at people who are actually employing 2 to 5 people and they can't really earn anything. So I think it's really not as good as what we think.
So Yazid, what do you propose the government do?
We can talk about short-term and long-term. From the short-term, I think this is going to be hard. I think cash transfer is definitely something that needs to be looked into. The amount that is provided and how fast it's provided is going to be critical. That's number one. And number two is there is actually no data to see what is actually the numbers that are getting the support in detail. Laksana must actually give us some more transparency, who actually gets it. What we are concerned is that those who don't deserve it are getting most of the bulk of the support. Those who really, really need it are not getting it because of some, paperwork issues and documentation issues, and they actually do not have the buffer. And having said that, we know that majority of the smaller PKSs are coming from the lower M40s and the majority of the B40s. So their ability to sustain, they don't have enough savings to buffer.
We talk about the whole government approach to help citizens, right? But there's also the whole society approach. So Yazid, I mean, you represent about like 47 NGOs. What are they doing to help the most vulnerable Malays? And also, what is the role of zakat bodies? Could they play a bigger role?
So zakat cannot be seen as a fund to support businesses. What the NGOs are trying to do now is actually trying to facilitate how exactly can they get the support that the government has promised. But we found out that there are still a lot of complaints that these support and facilities are not getting to them. Like we got lots of reports that the SRF loans are not getting it. We got a lot of companies complaining that the wage subsidy, they're not getting it. We got a lot of this employment retention program are still there. You know, we got employees that have not gotten any of the 600 ringgit that was promised. It's still stuck. So these are concerns of the SMEs that we got on the ground. And a lot of them are unclear what else can they do because they can't turn back time and get their documentation in order. So the government must figure out a way how to actually make sure that the facilities and the support are given to them as soon as possible, without all this bureaucracy. And within a month, and if things don't improve, I think you'll see a lot of reaction from the public, especially the PKS community.
Yeah, so because the Zakat bodies, I understand it should be to help individuals, not companies. So I'm just wondering, could they play a bigger role, to work with the lower income group, the most vulnerable?
I think they are. I think, if I'm not mistaken, during the month of Ramadan, especially, I think the Zakat are actually doing it. But from what I understand from the Zakat bodies, they already have a list, and these lists are being attended to. So on top of that, if I'm not mistaken, they are also getting support from Bantuan Sara Hidup, BSH. They're also getting support from the PPN. So the question is whether it's enough or not. What's more important, we also have 400,000 unemployed graduates that are entering the job market when there are no jobs. So we need to figure out how to solve that problem too. We need to be tactically aware that there's a lot of foreign workers shuffling our employment market. It's not business friendly for me to say that let's get rid all of the foreign workers and just use our local ones, because that doesn't work. So we need to do tactically sector by sector to ensure that there's a balance between where we can prioritize our workers, our employees. That's two. Number three is we need to look at new opportunities that we need to decide now, because by the time we figure it out, it'll be too late. So such as food security, agriculture, and all these big issues that we need to rejig a little bit, understanding the COVID. How do we make sure we can self-sustain? Because for the next 1 year, I don't think everybody's going to try to produce for their own. The gap in terms of wealth inequality or household income inequality will increase due to this COVID. And this basically put whatever idea that we have put inside the shared prosperity vision to a situation whereby we need to do more so the divide is not worse than before.
The incidence of poverty rate in the rural area, something like 8.4%. This is the latest figures that I can find from DOS. And that's the highest. They form the highest group. So when we talk about agriculture and you talk about high poverty rate in rural, it almost feels like if you solve the agriculture problem, you will really help the rural areas. So Yazid, I'm wondering, some of your NGOs, how are they working with the government to bring more development, bring that new technology you talk about to the rural areas?
Well, that's the irony. I think before the government changed, there was a lot of discussion how to bring more tech, more technology, more digitalization in terms of making agriculture more profitable. But now it basically expedite that whole idea that we need to do it yesterday rather than today. So that's one. But number two is you got that right. That this is basically you could resolve unemployment if you could focus harder on sustainable farming, because now there's huge demand on food, etc. So I am in opinion that actually the problem is actually not. Yes, the agriculture will actually solve a lot in terms of the unemployment in the rural sector, but I am in the opinion that due to COVID, this reality will basically, it's quite natural. You will find that people in the rural areas are able to survive. They have land, they can grow things, they can survive. But what we have situation now, we have a huge number of urban poor that has no way to actually feed, to get food to their homes because they have no choice.
On The Breakfast Grill today, we're speaking with Noor Hisham Hussain, Chief Strategy Officer at EPF, and Ahmad Yazid Othman, the CEO of MTEM, or Majlis Tindakan Ekonomi Melayu. After this, we'll discuss social protection to provide financial buffer for all so that we can better weather future crises, and what are the challenges putting together such a plan. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On the panel today is Noor Hisham Hussain, Chief Strategy Officer at EPF, and Ahmad Yazid Othman, the CEO of MTEM. Longer term, EPF has talked about social protection, and we do need it when you consider that 80% of employees have less than 2 months' savings. What is lacking right now in our current protection framework, and what's your vision of better protection?
I don't think we can avoid significant reform of the entire system, because what COVID-19 has actually exposed is that there are significant gaps in our social protection system, and those gaps really need to be addressed. I think also that what COVID-19 has done is actually accelerated some of the big trends around the employment and the job market. We were seeing this increasing trend into self-employment, into gig work and all that. And what we're going to see going forward is an increasing number of people actually shifting into those areas. The unfortunate thing is that Malaysia and East Asia generally does not have a tradition of communal approach to social protection. In other words, you look at it from a really government or social perspective rather than looking at it from an individual perspective. People are starting to understand just how important having a holistic and comprehensive system actually is. Because now we're seeing that there's a big price to pay when we don't have it. We should not waste this opportunity to really look at, you know, really fixing what we can fix.
Now, social protection is not a new idea. EPF has funded a center in UM to study social security issues, I think, since all the way back to 2008. So what is hampering the government from moving ahead and laying down this more comprehensive social protection?
There is a bit of apathy in terms of the public. There is a lot of education that we need to do. Because when we talk about something like this, you know, it does entail some sacrifices on the part of people.
Higher taxes?
It does entail, absolutely. So it does mean that, you know, if you want to have a system that covers everybody, then everybody has to contribute. So we do need to have a real conversation at a national level. And not just within the government, what kind of system do Malaysians need? What kind of systems do we want to, can we afford? And how much do we really want to put into it?
When you say people, is it companies or who exactly is people? I mean, have you run a survey? I mean, as far as I understand, our society is quite compliance. You tell us to contribute more, we'll just contribute more. Contribute less, we contribute less.
No,
we just follow instruction. Yeah, so I mean, have you run a survey to know for sure people don't want it? I mean, have you run a campaign?
I think from the surveys that we have run occasionally, there is still very much a me versus we approach to social protection. It's still very much in Malaysia, as it is in the rest of East Asia, it's still very much family-oriented. The big concern that we have is that I think the demographic changes that we're all going through, and especially in Malaysia where we're aging very quickly, is that the family structure itself is breaking down. People having less children, people aren't getting married at all, I think. So, you know, we are rapidly approaching a situation where there isn't a family to support people in their retirement or if they get into trouble. And we really need to take a more public approach towards social insurance and social protection rather than relying on what we did before, which is primarily our parents, our brothers, our sisters, and so on. So it's really about preparing for the future.
Under EPF, you have the iSaraan scheme where self-employed people can make voluntary contributions and the government can top up. What's the take-up rate like? I mean, if you're saying 20% of the working population is self-employed, is the number of iSaraan contributors reflective of that number?
Unfortunately, no. We've had decent take-up, especially over the last couple of years. It's not approaching, I think, 400,000. But you compare that with the 3 million over that's actually self-employed, then it's obviously a too small of a fraction.
What do you think needs to change to encourage them to really take care of their own future retirement?
I think we need to move eventually to some kind of mandatory system. Singapore has that, Korea has that, Japan has that. But obviously, we still have to lay a lot of groundwork
And maybe more flexible withdrawal, because right now, the money when it goes into EPF is like a bit like Hotel Absolutely. California, right? Money can't come out so easily.
Yeah, well, not exactly, but close, yeah.
The Self-Employment Social Security Act requires own account workers to insure themselves, but the coverage is not universal. And the Employment Insurance System Act also does not include self-employed workers. So how can we make public self-employment insurance more accessible? Yazid, perhaps you could share your views.
Fine, we have to make it mandatory, but I'm sure my friends in the SME sector will object to it because they basically it's more cost to them, unless there is a way to make sure that they are actually able to some form of subsidy or some form of intervention whereby the government can subsidize some of that amount in the interest of helping the lower community. This one, we all know that insurance company can do a lot more for whatever amount that they have taken.
The My Salam scheme is interesting, the healthcare scheme. It's essentially funded by funds from an insurance company whose clients had prematurely stopped paying their premiums. So this is one way to remobilize unproductive funds. Hisham, there are some ways that we could think about. I mean, have you given this some thought?
I'm not that big of a fan of My Salam, but there are innovative ways of actually managing funds. I think the big thing is not so much about raising funds, it's more about making sure that the money is efficiently managed, efficiently collected, and efficiently distributed. What Singapore does is that they have they put trust funds for specific programs. So it's very clear about how the money is actually used. And I think if we can demonstrate to the people that what they contribute is actually transparently and efficiently used, then I think there's going to be a lot more acceptance in terms of the contribution side.
You have to reform the institutions, maybe the leadership, maybe work process, and then only make these changes.
I agree with you. That it's the institutional factor that I think is very important.
I agree with that as well.
Yes, it. So, when I look at, the statistics, right, the B40, most of them are the Malay community, and the Malays command about 60% of the population. In terms of the self-employed, I think they also punch above their weight. The Bumis represent 57% of total employment, but almost 64% of the self-employed group. And also when we talk about income divide, the income divide within the Bumi Putra community has been increasing. And also there's still that some disparity between different races, but that one we may have to take a more nuanced approach in understanding those figures. For 50 years, the government has done a lot for the Malay community and, of course, for the country at large. But what do you feel is still missing?
Well, I think we had a lot of discussion on this. I mean, this COVID also forced us to relook at a lot of data. Number one is we don't really have the data on the economic situation that the Putra. There's a lot of data that we really don't know who actually represent the Bumi community. Whatever we have is actually from the NGOs, but the institution do not have the data to ensure to say that X amount of Bipitra PKS is actually all right, but data is actually still questionable. There needs to be a better way to understand the data and to know where we're at, one. Number two is we need to ensure there are no hanky-panky, Alibaba, corruption, all of this stuff that is still bogging the government, both government, so this has to be resolved so to ensure that the government intervention goes to where it's intended. And three is we need to be honest with ourselves that as long as we are in Malaysia, as long with the historical context, with the constitutional context, with the population element, we need to understand there is a need to accept that the Bumi community has been not been able to catch up, because the reality is an exponential growth. You can't, you need to run three times faster than the rest to ensure that you catch up. And having said that, we also are also growing in numbers. So you will find that more people are unable to be part of the mainstream economy. So the government or we must take note of how do we do that. And I think if we can understand the numbers better and we can stay true to the whatever the inside the realities that's mentioned inside the set prosperity vision and fix those gaps, then I think we can figure out how to do it. What happened before, there was a lot of sloganeering, there was a lot of justification, but the reality is that there's no trickle down. But then you see a lot of community did not actually get what they're supposed to get. And I think that is a betrayal to the whole community economy agenda, which also, of course, becomes a punching bag for a lot of people. But as far as we are concerned, the reality is as such, and we still need to continue to resolve it. So we need to figure out how do we do this together as a country
or not, we will be able to solve it.
We're talking about affirmative actions or support. We're not talking about there's only a need for race-based. There is a need for need-based, locality, regional areas. But there are various components that we must accept. It's not one fix for all. The issue is how do we close the gap, regardless of race, inter-race, intra-race. And we need to do it, and also across states.
Point out that social protection isn't just about poverty. It's also about healthcare. It's about education. It's about nutrition. So these are areas that cut across, you know, really all races, and it's really a national agenda.
Yazid, so Perikatan Nasional made a case for forming a backdoor government because Malay interests were being sidelined, and that's their narrative. How now do you view this move by Pakatan Harapan to put in a motion of a no-confidence vote against Tan Sri Muhyiddin?
This is what I love about BFM. They come up with awesome questions. Well, my view is the narrative is actually validated. There are a lot of comments and complaints. I think to a certain extent, Pakatan Harapan did a very good job. However, it's able to deliver in terms of within two years, which is what the people are saying. So, of course, when the politics is not stable, the economy is bad, and surely we have political narratives that will justify why it's such and so. Whether it's true or not, I leave it to the political pundits. But from an economic point of view, it is true that the Malays do feel that they are not getting a fair share in comparison with before, which is what we hope wasn't the case. But what we are hopeful is actually, we were hoping for that some of the reforms that was done by the previous government can be continued. For example, their need for more better governance and that their fight against corruption, that's definitely something to be applauded and to be continued. Their initiative to ensure better protection for they made some changes to the BSH to ensure that there are some context given to those who have more families, etc. So I'm not able to comment whether what's going to happen on the parliament side, but I would say if you were to ask me as a CEO from MTEM whether there is some truth in that perception that the Malays are sidelined, I can safely say that the community, Bumiputra economy do acknowledge that there has been some difference between the kind of support. We've got cases whereby contracts that were used to be exclusively for Bumiputra are open for all, the amount of contracts differ. So these sort of like validate the political narrative that have been given by now the current government. So it's a certain extent, I do hope whatever it is said and done, the interest of the nation is still being protected by any parties, whoever they may be.
Hisham, do you feel that the Malay interests have been sidelined?
Well, I really can't say, because obviously my focus has been quite different. It's not something that I really follow that closely. But I think from EPF's perspective, I think we really want to focus on being able to continue with systemic reform, which protects everybody. And really making sure that, you know, that there aren't any gaps in the social protection system.
Thank you for your time, and it was a pleasure speaking with you. Noor Hisham Hussain, Chief Strategy Officer at EPF, and Ahmad Yazid Ohman, the CEO of MTEM. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.